Good morning. You've tuned into the morning show here on 88.5 KRFY. I'm Jack, and across from me is Jim. We are your usual Thursday morning co-hosts on the KRFY morning show.
Jack, that was an enthusiastic good morning. That good was elongated.
Yes. Well, I don't know. It's a change of season or something like that. It's that beautiful fall weather.
It's dark. It's damp. When I came down here to the station, I wondered if anybody else in the world was awake at my point in time.
What time was that?
About 6:15. I walked down here, and there was nobody. And, you know, didn't anybody else get up? No, it was sort of like, we need to be cheery about it, because outside it's sort of like, I don't know what the word is, but it's not meeting my mood right now. How's that?
Yeah, the weather does not suit your clothes or something like that.
Oh, dear. Let me talk about the weather. Let people know.
Okay, yes. I have the weather before me.
And then I'll see how I feel after that.
I enjoyed it, actually. It's warmer.
You pedaled.
I pedaled down, and I think last week I pedaled down, and I had to bundle up, and I think there were tears streaming down my face when I walked in the door. But
I think now
today,
it's going to be in the lower 50s. Right now it's about 47.
Yep. It's not raining right this second, but it's drizzling, you know, on and off.
It's piddling.
Yes. It's a piddling rain.
I mean,
that's nice.
If weather forecasters can say patchy fog and things like that, I can say it's piddling.
Yes. That's exactly what it is. The rain today is mainly before noon, mostly cloudy today with a high of about 52 degrees. 60% chance of precipitation. Tonight, low around 39 degrees with a 90% chance of precipitation.
Whoa.
Likely rain tomorrow with, again, a high of 52 and another 60% chance kind of day. 70% chance of rain on Friday night. 100% chance of rain on Saturday, particularly in the morning. And on Saturday, that precipitation could actually be snow. That could be snow.
Could be.
On Saturday.
You realize what you've done there. You've gotten all the skiers and snowboarders and snowshoers in the area just all twitchy.
Just, yeah.
You know, you just say the four-letter word snow and they start, you know, foaming. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. Ski wax starts flying off the shelves.
I mean, let me tell you.
Well, anyway, it's going to rain on Saturday night as well, down to 35 degrees and then a slight chance of rain. So it's just going to be kind of a wet one here. Sunday, chance of rain is about 40% and a high of 45 and a 50% chance of rain on Monday. I guess the bottom line is
It's chancy.
Yeah, on and off rain all weekend with perhaps some snow on Saturday morning.
Well, I have the weather forecast for the Washington, D.C. area as a tribute to my sister and brother-in-law, who I'm surprised they sent me the weather forecast, because they're still on air about the Washington Nationals sweeping the St. Louis Cardinals in 4 games to win the National League.
Well,
they've never done that before, and now they're going to face either the Yankees or the Astros, you know, in the World Series. But my sister says, good morning. And she says, 55 now, high of 59, windy, intermittent clouds, and below normal temps. So that is the weather for D.C. I do that.
That's about here. 55.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're in the 50s. Close. But the thing is that it's the amazing world of technology that no matter where you are in the world, you can tune in to 88.5 KRFY. Yes.
I was going to say,
and listen to Heather and Cassie from the Bonner County Historical Museum. Not historic core. I want to say historic. It's history.
Well, it's a mouthful. We go by the Bonner County History Museum or the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. So it's just about how you're feeling that day.
Whatever words come out. So you were going to say something I just jumped in and interrupted you.
But I was going to interject and say that there is a hazardous weather outlook of this bulletin from the National Weather Service.
Yeah, we're all scoffing at it. What are they saying?
Outlook, which is different than a watch, a warning, or an advisory. This is an outlook.
Okay.
Day one, which is today and tonight, a Pacific storm will move through the inland northwest during this period, delivering breezy winds, light to moderate rains, and some snow over the highest mountains. Day two through seven, which is Friday through next Wednesday, Active weather will continue into early next week across the region. This will bring periods of breezy winds and moderate to locally heavy precipitation. The best chance of heavy precipitation will occur on Saturday, with snow levels generally around 4,000 feet. This will likely impact travel over mountain passes. In some of the heavy precipitation areas, snow levels could briefly lower to the valley floors, especially over the Idaho Panhandle. Hey, that's us. Those with plans to venture into the mountains are urged to monitor the latest forecasts and plan accordingly. The heavy precipitation will also lead to significant rises on rivers and streams near the Cascades and over to the Idaho Panhandle through the middle of next week. So,
Jack,
it's action over the Pacific. It affects us over here.
I want to thank you for the outlook. Mm-hmm. In the next, you know, 5-6 days, I'm going to be outlooking. How's that?
Mm-hmm.
How about you guys, Cassie and Heather? We have Heather Upton and Cassie Marler.
Good morning.
Good morning again. Sorry
Good morning.
To interrupt there.
And we've just got a boatload, a busload of events at the museum. And first of all, let's begin with something very basic. Where is the museum located?
So the address of the museum, if we want to be formal, if you want to put it into your Google Maps, is 611 South Ella Avenue. But easier known around here, it's by Memorial Field, and it is behind the big yellow caboose in Lakeview Park. Yep, most people know, I remember the caboose in the park. We are the building right behind it. And if you come and visit us during our open hours, which is Tuesday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and we are open year-round with those hours, you can actually go through the caboose. I don't know if most people know that Heather, our curator, has actually curated the inside of the caboose as well. So that is an exhibit
that we
have available.
So that's part of the exhibit?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
Cool. I did not know that. I just thought it was just there.
Oh, I mean, for years, we used it as a storage facility, but that was always our goal. And so we were so excited to have it curated and open. And I think every child, it's their dream to be able to go inside and experience it.
Do they get to go up to the, what, is there an engine room in a caboose or is it just the tail end?
So there's not an engine room on this particular, we'd call it a cart.
Yeah, so the caboose is more like a living quarters.
Yeah. Ah.
And so it's really cool inside. It has everything you wouldn't imagine that it, I mean, you could literally, people go in there and they're like, I'm pretty sure I could live in
this. Yeah, my husband once like went on our property and making it a tiny home. There is a wood burning stove. There's like propane tanks. So that's, you know, how they, and electricity and everything like that.
There's a toilet.
Yeah.
Oh, that's important.
There's a toilet. There is an ice box. There's beds.
So it's not like seats in there, like you walk through a train.
Benches that you could lay down and take a nap, you know, so they're kind of laid down. Hmm. So it was really fun going down the rabbit hole and learning about how the experience of how it would be to be on there. And mostly they were looking out for animals and, you know, other dangerous things on the track.
Yeah,
a caboose is used for like the train staff, the engineers, to sleep in. And
yeah, you know, they kept like their tools. They had a closet in there that it was literally the living quarters while they were traveling. There's a cupola up on the top of it, and so that's where it was like a watchtower essentially, where they can you can climb up the ladder on the inside, sit up there, and
the cupola.
Watch the track.
That's what that shape is about.
Yeah, yes. Okay. And very few times do they actually spend the night. Through some oral histories, we found that if they were like, you know, too much snow and they were kind of trapped in an area, that sort of thing. But they took naps and so forth, and they received mail and different documents to give to the engineer.
So all the movies I've seen where people are standing at the end of the train waving goodbye or whatever, and then they turn around and walk in and there's seats. So that's not Is that fake?
There, you have premier passenger trains. And the thing about railroad is it's such an incredible, extensive subject. And we were really lucky when I actually just installed the new exhibit, We Arrived by Rail, and it's about railroad. It's in Bonner County. And even though I was in, you know, put that exhibit together, I partnered up with Will Valentine, who's a longtime volunteer board member, and he's a train expert. And I mean, I still sometimes have a hard time wrapping my mind around all the train details because it's such an involved subject. But you did, you had trains that moved goods, you had trains that moved people, you had the dinky, which transported goods. In between, kind of like modern day drayage, you had reefer trains, not what you think, that, you know, were for refrigeration, moving ice. And so there were so many different trains that had many different purposes. But you're thinking about the premier trains. And I remember when I first rode the train here, our contemporary Amtrak train, I thought that it was going to be like Orient Express. I was a little bit wrong, but it was still a lovely journey.
What vintage is that caboose? Do you know? Or
I believe that it's 1941. So it was from the Spokane International, railway. And, so it's really important for us to have that caboose here. It's really special because that, the trail that goes, from here to Dover, that actually follows the Spokane International tracks. And so, we have all these photos from the 90s when the tracks were torn up. And so the tracks used to run pretty much right down Fifth, past the co-op. And so that was where the tracks came through town. And it's one of the lines that does not exist anymore here that was here for a long time. And so it's really special that we have a caboose from that rail line because it really is a piece of history that we have been able to preserve. And so
rails, you know, created Sandpoint, essentially.
Yeah, that was the beginning.
And what a neat outside visible attraction. Like you mentioned, yes. For little children.
Yes.
They said, I don't want to go inside the museum. I want to stay here with the caboose.
I think that most people that come in with children, young children, to the museum, I always, you know, greet them like, oh, so exciting. You guys have chosen to come to the museum today. And the parents are always like, well, we really just want to look at the caboose.
Wonderful. Well, let's start our conversation with the yard sale. How did that go?
Yes, the last time we were in here, we were essentially begging people to bring us items. Yes.
They came through.
Everyone came. They pulled through for us.
Amazing.
It was incredible.
We exceeded, you know, what our goal was. So, and we had such incredible volunteers.
Doesn't that make a difference?
Amazing.
Yeah.
People donating things. It was such a great example of how awesome our community is.
The community rallies are on. Just a question. What do you do with the items that do not sell?
So the items that do not sell, Bazaar has a wonderful volunteer that comes in to pokes through the items that are left over. So we give them first pick if they want to take anything because Cal is one of our biggest contributors. And after they have looked through and taken what they want, then we kind of divvy up into different loads and distribute to all of the different thrift stores. Like the Panhandle Animal Shelter gets a big load.
Kind of matches the different other, you know, nonprofit institutions. And I think that's what's so fun about it is it's really a full circle thing. And so we're making sure that everything finds the perfect home and other nonprofits can benefit from it too.
What a great idea. And then I take it you start from scratch then every year rather than having to store things in the caboose.
Yep. Then we start from scratch. We don't have a lot of space left over for we're pretty full to the max with what we have that's actually a piece of the museum. So
a lot of people to thank when you do fundraising. The same thing here at the radio station is that when we have fundraising, so many people behind the scenes in order to make it a success. And that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. We just finished our
auction.
Thank you.
And we want to thank everyone, the people who donated, the people who submitted non-winning bids, and the people who submitted the winning bids.
I only submitted non-winning bids.
Did you get the
bids.
Apple pie?
No. No. I wonder who did.
Well, the person who bakes the apple pies is our guest next week. And we could say, no access to the airwaves, bring a pie.
Uh-huh.
How's that? We could do that. Would that be quid pro quo?
Unfortunately, that would be, yes. Okay. I think that would be
I just said it on the air, a quid pro quo thing. moving right along.
Okay.
We've got a holiday at the end of this month, and how does that impact the museum?
So if you have never been to the museum's trick-or-treat event, you are greatly missing out. Last year, we had over 800 people come through the museum in one night. This is going to be our seventh year doing our trick-or-treat your way through the museum. We decorate like you have never seen before. We spend literally days, and you can't even tell that there are exhibits up on the walls because we have themed Halloween rooms all the way through. We change out the light bulbs.
It's a huge undertaking, and each space is curated for Halloween, essentially. So we have our awesome team that comes in, and my five-year-old he's so funny. He's like, Halloween is truly his favorite holiday, and
rightfully so,
right? Yes. And he's like, oh, the museum does the most incredible Halloween. He's like, you are number one for decorating.
you can't get a better endorsement,
right?
You know, one of the things, we'll get back to this in a second, I want to say, Jack, too bad we're not a visual medium, because you should have seen Cassie's and Heather's faces light up when we started talking about the museum. I mean, it's sort of like it's magic. And, you know, and to see the way you just brightened up with what goes on at the museum. So
Cool place.
Well, what are the dates and that?
So this year, in previous years, we have only had the event on Halloween, and so we're always really hectic to try and get it up and get it down, and then people always come through and say, I really want to come back and see all of this up. And so we are actually decorating the week before Halloween. And so if you would like to see, we're decorating on the 25th. That's a Friday.
That's a Friday.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so we are going to be open the following Tuesday from 10 to 4, the 29th. So the 29th and the 30th, Tuesday and Wednesday. If you would like to come see all of our Halloween decorations before the big event, you can come to the museum 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And will be open to, you can come in and walk through, take your time. Then on Thursday, the 31st, on Halloween, we will be open our regular hours 10 to 4. But from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m., you will be able to trick-or-treat. So we will have volunteers passing out candy. You can bring your trick-or-treaters in, and they can trick-or-treat their way through the museum. This is a really great collaboration as well with the Lions Club. That's the building that is in front of the caboose right by the parking lot.
Right.
And so they actually do a trick-or-treat event too. And they either pass out, sometimes it's popcorn, sometimes it's cookies, and they do hot apple cider. And ooh, so it's a great way to, they don't do a whole lot of decorations. So it's kind of just a casual walkthrough.
But don't forget about the giant cat where yes. have to cross under its lakes.
It's like a giant blow up.
That's the Lions Club.
It's you can't miss
it's
us.
Such and it's such a neat area, and South Sandpoint is just so beautiful with all the history and fun. So I live up in Naples, but we go to the museum, we go to the Lions Club, and then we do, you know, a few houses in South Sandpoint, and then we celebrate with some friends, and it's like the perfect, like, warm, safe, wonderful, like, area.
Yeah. At no matter what time you come through the museum between 4 and 7, you will hit probably at least 10 volunteers standing throughout, scattered throughout the museum.
In costume.
Absolutely.
I just want to throw out that on the 29th and 30th, which is a Tuesday and a Wednesday, that would be a great opportunity for, let's say, senior citizens' homes and those sorts of establishments to
great idea.
Bring folks through.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I think there's always a kid in us who remembers Halloween and trick-or-treating, and where you come to a point in your life, I guess, but where you're no longer putting in costumes, but you certainly enjoy the energy.
Yeah. And great visual splendor with all of the
Exactly. So the 29th and 30th, you know, great time to go to the museum and just enjoy, even if your children are in college or elsewhere. You know, you're never too old to enjoy the vision of Halloween.
I'll never forget... So I show up with my family to trick or treat the museum, and here comes Cassie around the corner, and she made the most awesome Rosie the Riveter I had ever seen.
Rosie the Riveter?
Oh yeah, that's my go-to.
Right out of the poster. So if anything, come see us dressed
up. It's always a surprise. And our Halloween.
Do you have metal on it? I mean, do you have like nuts and bolts hanging down all over you?
Like a screwdriver in the back pocket.
Yeah, screwdriver.
Bandana.
But you know, like red lipstick, which if you know me at all, that's never.
Just come to see that.
It's the only time you'll ever see it.
And your hair up and the bandana around.
Oh, yeah, denim.
The chambray.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. I want to throw out, too, that Kinixu Health Services has sponsored our Halloween event a couple years in a row now. And it is a huge help because every year we're trying to add more decorations. They support us with buying some more decorations to make it even better every year. And then, like I said, last year we had 800 people come through, and so we have to buy a lot of candy to be able to do this trick-or-treat event, and so it definitely would not be possible without the support of sponsors, as well as I think almost every single one of our volunteers ends up purchasing one of those giant $20, $25 bags of candy and brings it in for
us.
So
lucky.
How wonderful.
They're a huge help.
Are you going as anything this year, Jim?
I won't be here.
Oh, that's right. You're going to,
San Francisco. Once again, at the Bonner County Museum, October 31st from 4 to 7 is the actual trick-or-treating and giving out candy. But on the Tuesday and Wednesday before, the 29th and 30th, stop by and look at the decorations, even if you won't be bringing a child around.
Absolutely. It's worth it.
Oh, what fun. Should we take a musical break and then come back? But you will be closed on November 1st.
Yes. So we are going to be closed on November 1st, the day following Halloween. Mm-hmm. So that that Friday, it is, if you come and see it, you will understand. It is an all hands on deck trying to take these decorations down. And we decided this year that we really need a full day to dismantle our Halloween. And so we will be closed. And then after the break, we'll come back and you'll find out why we'll be closed.
Candy hangover. Well, isn't the second, the first Saturday of the month, a free? So will you be doing that? Will it be open on the 7th?
We will be open on Saturday. So if you're too disappointed you can't come in on Friday, we'll be open on Saturday, and we'll be all back to normal, and it will be free. So.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. We're going to take a break. We're here with Heather Upton and Cassie Marler from the Bonner County Historical Society. How's that? On this date in 1967, way back when, October 17th, a play premiered off-Broadway that had a long run on Broadway, and it was Hair. One of those plays that had been an eye-opener for all sorts of reasons. Its subject matter, its theme, the lack of dress. And I thought we'd play the final song, The Flesh Failures, Let the Sun Shine In, from Hair, that premiered off-Broadway on this date in 1967, 52 years ago today. That was The Flesh Failures, Let the Sun Shine In, the final song from Hair that premiered off-Broadway on this date in 1967.
Mm-hmm. You said you saw it in Lincoln?
Lincoln, Nebraska. A couple years later, it was a traveling show.
Uh-huh.
And lots of controversy. People were upset about bringing a work of art that had such loose morals and the kind of lifestyles it promoted. But the music was spot on.
I only know, there's a couple famous things about Hair. I mean, I guess I only know that there's nudity. It has that song. And
the
That's about it. I don't know anything
about it. The Cowsills version of Hair. Easy to Be Hard was another hit.
Mm-hmm.
It was...
I don't really know the story of it, I guess. Or what, you know, what the...
The story.
I can imagine with the title.
Yeah.
There's a little giveaway.
It's a very loose of people who... expressing free love, alternate values from the 50s into the 60s, and many of the songs became part of the soundtrack to the Vietnam years. And so it was social commentary, very loosely, but the songs were, and the presentations were what held the musical Hair together.
Yes, and Cassie's father was in it when it came to Seattle, apparently.
Yes, in more recent years.
or I guess not in it as a or as a musician.
Yeah, as a musician.
Yeah, what fun. While we're listening to the song, Cassie showed us a photograph of her dad on this incredible horse that was lit up, you know, day glow, just...
very artistic show.
Psychedelic.
Absolutely.
And, good memories. We're here with Heather Upton, who is the curator, Cassie Marler, the museum coordinator, and we just got through talking about the neat Halloween events.
Mm-hmm. You guys are here from the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. Is that still technically the name?
That works. Yes. I think so people will know that's us.
Yeah. There's no... not to be confused with some other group by a similar name.
Who you guys again?
But that made me wonder, who is the Historical Society? I only know about the museum.
I think sometimes there's a little bit of a confusion because there's also Sandpoint City-based Historic Preservation Commission, which I'm actually a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And I act as like a liaison for the museum. But that Historical Society part, Cassie, I mean, has to do with the research you do.
That as well as... the society started long before there was a museum.
Mm-hmm.
So it really started as the Bonner County Historical Society when they were trying to bring a history society together. There was a group of people that wanted to preserve the history of the area. And so they came together and then they worked really hard to... they established the society in 1972, and then in the late 70s, they were finally able to bring together enough funding to put the building up where we are now. So that whole park area prior to the park and the museum was the Bonner County Fairgrounds. So that's where the fairgrounds sat. And then when they moved over off of Boyer, then... we were able to build a build a museum there, and then it became a city park.
So the neat thing about belonging to the museum, just with some simple admission, you belong to a society of history. So keep that in mind.
Whoa. Exactly. Do I have to dress up?
You
in
can.
In a cloak.
Before we go on to other events, I'm sure that people who are listening have items that might be of interest to the museum. How does one find out if these are something? You know, I know that I have a postcard collection of Sandpoint, and I've taken it down to the museum, and they even took some photographs of some of the postcards that they haven't seen before. And when I become so moved, I'm going to donate them to the museum.
That's so generous of you.
Well, you know, I'm sure that there's people, you know, in the community who have incredible things that might find a home in the museum.
Well, and that's the thing to keep in mind. We are as strong as an institution as the donations are. So that's donations of objects, archival material, photos, and oral histories. So that is our foundation. We can always do research from other sources, but whenever I'm putting an exhibit together, I'm using all of those aspects of what has been donated to the museum. And so when people are able to donate their information or objects or any of that, photos where we scan and give them back, that makes the museum so much stronger. But one of the things we always have to remember is we represent Bonner County. So whenever I'm doing an exhibit, it has to relate back to Bonner County. Mm-hmm. And Cassie is the person that when you walk in or you call would be facilitating any of that.
Yeah. So the easiest way to actually go about this is to give us a call, or our website is bonnercountyhistory.org. And we have it all laid out on there. You can find our email. If it's an object, a physical object, the best way is if it's possible for you to email us a photograph, we can very quickly have an answer for you. Always give us the history of the item. And I know Heather is, she is definitely on the object heavy side because she's the curator. I am an archival nerd. And so a lot of things that people don't think are important, we are constantly uncovering like these hidden mysteries of the county. And that's one of my absolute favorite things is to find these archival pieces that have these huge mysteries uncovered. And
it's amazing. Cassie's always finding these. You're such an incredible researcher. You're always finding these fabulous stories, or so many people want photos of their building or their house. Cassie is the one. She's able to, it's almost like she knows all 70,000 photos in our archives. So we're really lucky to have her as a resource. So she's our historical society.
I guess I am the historical society part.
I just brought in a calendar from 1945. Where's that from?
Darling.
So this is from the Walter L. Brown Grocery Fountain Service. And it's interesting because it says open evenings and Sunday. This is from 1945. And some of you listening might be able to picture what I'm talking about. These were quite popular between the 30s and 40s. So people used it as a form of marketing where there is a great calendar that you could hang on the wall that has a wonderful picture on top, and then it has their business across, and then these little calendars that are stapled on the bottom where you could pull off month to month. And these, we have a pretty good collection of these, but I always think it'd be awesome to see, to be able to collect all the years that all of the different businesses would do these, because I always wonder if I could talk to the the person that gets to choose the picture for them, because right. the picture is always really interesting. I think that in the 40s, there are so many, if that, maybe that was the era that they did these prints of children or animals.
Yeah, baby with exactly. the dog leaning over. Yeah, like puppies and children. It's like they were so popular.
Yeah.
Well, we live in an age where every month has a different picture. You better like the picture on these calendars, because you're staring at it for the whole year.
You only get one.
And one of the things I love about this little treasure you presented to us is the framing. Someone took so much time in creating like a shadow box, like a multi-layered matting with a beautiful frame. And that's something to think about. A lot of people ask Cassie and I, like, oh, I have a jewelry collection, or I have like the first dress or apron of so-and-so. And it's fun to see how people take these objects of history and turn them into artwork.
And let me back up to the calendar. Do you know where Arthur Brown Grocery was?
I actually do not know.
No, it's Walter Brown.
Yeah, Walter Brown Grocery. I will definitely be looking up. So as soon as I see anything like this, when I don't know, it's like my mind starts going exactly in the process where I'm going to go to find this. A little inn, if you have any, one of my handiest tools is the physical directories throughout the years.
Phone directories?
Yes. Yeah, and so we have directories. We're really heavy in the early 40s, late 50s, and then pretty much 1960 and on, we have almost all of them. The earliest directory we have is 1912.
Oh, what fun.
And so it's heavily used. That's one of my biggest mystery solvers, because it listed, and it's pretty thick for 1912, and I mean, it listed each person, where they lived, if they owned the house or not. And then something else to point out on this calendar here, it says their phone number is 57. So this is back when you had to call the operator and you could give business name or 57, and so it's
and you get the business.
You get them right on, yeah.
The reason I have that is that I was born in 1945, and I thought, how neat to have a calendar from Sandpoint.
I think that's mm-hmm. a wonderful
Absolutely.
Treasure.
You know, I was born in December, and we can't see that without ripping off.
Oh, you are a Sagittarius, aren't you?
Amen on that,
I
sister.
I know, right?
You too?
December 16th.
Yeah. Same here.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh. And, do you blend?
And the outlier is?
Leo.
A Gemini.
Oh, a twin. Ah, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the museum's newest exhibit or the holiday sale coming up?
Oh, well, those two are kind of in conjunction.
Okay.
So halfway through the year, we always make a huge splash, and the museum goes through a bit of a transformation, if you will. So during that time, actually November 1st, we're closed. We're going to be deinstalling the Halloween, but I'm actually going to be working away with the director, and we'll be flipping the gift store into a holiday extravaganza. So that's kind of and I don't want to give too many details away about what it will look like, but I curate the gift shop too, and kind of bring the holiday and inspire people when they walk in. I always transform it. And then I've also been working on some really great new store merchandise, which I think will be really, really fun. Our gift shop has really, it's becoming well known as a place to find really extraordinary gifts, things you don't find everywhere, gifts for yourself and others. So make sure to come and shop the gift shop this holiday season. You don't have to just come to the museum to tour the museum. You can come on in. And then if you're also a member, you get 10% off automatically, which is quite exciting. So we have a little something for everybody. So that's one of the two things that's happening, would be the gift shop overhaul.
And so if you are, it's kind of a confusing schedule here, but we're going to be closed Friday, November 1st, and then open the next day for our free first Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And that is sponsored by Marilyn Sabella and Eve's Leaves. And so that Saturday, and then the following week, Tuesday through Friday, that's the first full week in November, that is going to be the last week that you will be able to see our wonderful exhibit, Wunderkammer. So that is the last big exhibit that Heather has curated.
We call them temporary exhibits, and they're up, like, essentially, they started to be up like half yearly, but they've been so popular that they last for about a year. And so we think of them as our blockbuster exhibits, if you will. They're very they're outside the box in terms of thought. They're like visual pieces of art, if I can say that about my work.
They're a huge opportunity for us because permanent exhibits, once they're up, it's not frequent for them to change.
Yeah.
But these temporary exhibits, I don't think a lot of people realize that the museum, between our objects, archives, and photographs, we have over 1 million pieces.
Oh, good Lord.
It is, it's incredible. It's huge. So, we do have a lot of pieces that have this huge story, but we don't have the space or the exhibit area to present them. And so the key part to this, these temporary exhibits, is it gives us an opportunity to be able
Absolutely.
To bring out these pieces that we might not normally be able to have on display.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, Cassie. We're always trying to think about ways to circulate and bring objects out and give them spotlight. So yes, we definitely do that through our temporaries. We also are working on a lot of outside exhibit opportunities. One of the things we're moving forward on is pop-ups. So those are exhibits that will be in collaboration with retailers or restaurants or bars or in different institutions throughout. So if we have a collection that we think would be so cool, let's say in the county courthouse, I will find an opportunity to bring that to life. And so if any of you guys out there are interested, we're starting to formulate our lists of opportunities for these pop-ups. And maybe they're one evening or maybe they're for a couple of months. A couple of pop-ups that are currently happening. We have a great exhibit up at Schweitzer Mountain. It's about the history of Mount Schweitzer. You're walking up to Taps. It's a two-day exhibit up on the wall. And then the library is so generous. They always give us one of those fabulous windows as you're walking into the library. And right now I installed an exhibit called Crime Fighters. And we have some really cool artifacts from the county jail. We have great photos. And Cassie found, I love the collaboration that we have. Sometimes I'll be like, Cassie, I'm doing this exhibit.
What comes to mind
is she pulled out this box, and I'll let you describe this box.
So this is so like cool. One of my light up boxes. I had, it was the courthouse probably a year and a half ago. They brought me this box. It's like a banker's box, and I always get excited with because I'm like, oh, it must be archival material. And he says, we found this in the basement and we didn't really know.
Yeah. Even in the basement.
Right. A ghost has been haunting it.
Right. Like, we didn't really know what to do with it. I don't know if you guys might want it, but here you go. And actually, along with this donation, we also got the plaque that was put up on the courthouse in the 40s. And Ooh. So that bronze plaque, when they swapped out plaques on the front of the courthouse, we got one of those. So those kinds of pieces, amazing when people think of us.
Yeah.
And but within this box, I start going through and it is court case evidence from about 1908 to 1912.
So good. Like a,
so, okay. Yeah. So it is, it's like all the archival stuff. So there, if anybody in the community knows how to read shorthand, please come see
Ooh.
Me.
Yeah.
Because yes. I can't language. Find anyone that really knows well how to read or write shorthand anymore. And I have all of these books that are filled because they were doing this before even typewriters. And so this is them taking, this is, you know, like a secretary in the court, and they are taking all of these notes by shorthand while the court is going on. And so we have all those kinds of pieces. We have maps.
What, before I go too far, what phone number, if there is someone in the listening audience who either knows shorthand or knows someone who knows shorthand?
So you can call me at 208-263-2344. And yeah, that would be super helpful. This court case evidence box, it had pocket knives, it had a mushroomed bullet in an envelope, and they say case number, you know, so and so. It had a pair of scissors, there's like a little mirror, there's a stone that has all these etchings on it, and photographs. It just was like bringing
life
up
insurance,
all these
policy.
It's like what kind of cold cases we can come up with.
And so we just kind of, I just did a smattering to show some of those objects that were in there. I thought it'd be a fun story relating back to crime fighters, so you'll have to pop down to the museum and take a look at some of those objects.
Yeah.
How, you know, I mean, when somebody brings in a box like that, you must just go, oh, I can't imagine. And then they say in the basement or up in the attic. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's just like chills.
Even more so. It's got to be good stuff.
Yeah.
We could talk for a long time about the different things. Love your enthusiasm, Heather and Cassie, about the treasures that come into you. Mm-hmm. So we've got the what's left.
So the last thing that's we're going to be totally revamping is back to those temporary exhibits. Again, it's our new blockbuster exhibit, The Women Who Shaped Bonner County.
Ooh.
Right? Perfect timing with the centennial of the 19th Amendment coming up, too.
You bet.
And so we will be talking about women that were instrumental in different categories of society, politics, education, arts and culture. And again, these women that really impacted Bonner County. We'll have some incredible visuals, and some of the stories are amazing. And really what this exhibit does, well, part of this is when I did Tales of the Wardrobe, which was fashion in Bonner County from 1880 to 1960, people were like, how did these women do what they did in corsets and these long, you know, trained dresses? And so it will be fun to be able to answer some of those questions in this new exhibit. And these women are truly phenomenal. So it's an exhibit that can really be appreciated and enjoyed by everyone.
And what that also can, not only how did they wear the corsets, how did they keep them clean? How did they wash them?
Absolutely.
They didn't have the washing machine. How did they dry them? Mm-hmm. How did they keep them until they wore them again?
One of the stories that also sticks to me, these women were so hardy. And so they would come here and let's say, you know, they became a widow, unfortunately. So they would literally live in the barn and rent out their house as a boarding house to be able to provide for their family. I mean, it's the amount of sacrifice and strength is truly incredible. And I think everyone will really, really enjoy this one. So I am working hard right now. I have an amazing team of volunteers that have been supporting me with research. And I've been getting all my visuals together. And then we'll be closed the 9th through the 22nd. That's installation. And there's so much involved in an exhibit. It's pretty incredible. So many layers, whether it's writing or the visuals. And so I'm down there, you know, doing my thing. So you'll have to make sure to see the end result on November 23rd. And that will be a huge event. It will be a reveal of the gift shop, all the new look,
the
merchandise, we'll have a holiday extravaganza, and then you'll also be able to get to see the new exhibit. One of the things about being a member with the museum is you get some really fabulous membership perks.
Yeah. We have been working hard on trying to get our membership levels up. And one thing that we always tell people is that membership, an annual membership to the museum, costs less than one cup of coffee a month. So I mean, it's a pretty good deal that you're getting to be part of such an incredible group of people. And so we have different levels of membership where you can actually be even a business sponsorship at the higher levels. But we actually have... we've come up with this new, we don't have like a sustaining membership like a lot of people have, a lot of different functions have, and a lot of our community members have asked if there is a sustaining membership, some way that they're paying more than once a year, but at a lower cost. And so, you know, you think of all the things that you pay for, like Netflix or all those things that are just come out automatically or just reoccurring payments. And you don't even think about it because it's like $5, $8, whatever it is. So we have actually come up with a new level of membership to the museum. And it is actually called the 1907 Club. So this is kind of in memorandum of the of Bonner County being established in 1907. And so that is our sustaining membership level. And the best part about it is that you actually get to pick your amount. So if you go to our website and click on the membership tab, and that again is bonnercountyhistory.org, you can find all of our membership levels along with we actually have some of our gift shop merchandise on there with our customs. You can get Bonner County custom t-shirts and hats. There's all sorts of stuff that you can find right on that at that membership tab. It'll take you right to our store website. But that 1907 Club is listed under that tab, and you can learn all about all the perks that you'll get there. As well as the different amounts that you can pick.
So keep in mind, if you want to have a sneak peek and an exclusive opportunity to see the gift shop, see the new Blockbuster exhibit, you can, if you're not already a member, go online, become a member. And so the event will be from 2 to 4 mm-hmm. for museum members. And then we will, and there'll be special treats and different things going on. Mary Gill Young, amazing local jeweler, is going to be there doing a trunk show. And then at 3 o'clock for the members, I will be doing a behind the scenes exclusive tour, sharing about the new exhibit. And then from 4 to 7, we'll be open to the public. Or excuse me, 4 to 6.
Yes, 4 to 6.
This is on November 23rd. So a lot of dates there. If you forget, check us out.
Go to the website.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the best, if you're confused about any of these dates, come see me on November 2nd, our free first Saturday. That's, you know, with our weather, how it's been, it might be kind of a gloomy, rainy Saturday, and it's a perfect opportunity to come visit the museum, and I can give you the lowdown on all these dates we've been throwing at you, fill you in about membership, and it's free, sponsored by Marilyn Sabella at Eve's Leaves. Our free first Saturday is the first Saturday of every month throughout the entire year. Each one is sponsored by an incredible family or business in the community, and they're paying their membership at a higher rate to allow the community to come to the museum for free one day a month, which is a pretty amazing deal.
Tremendous support of the community. Cassie, Heather, as I listen to you, you know that we in the Sandpoint, North Idaho community are so fortunate to have the two of you at the museum.
Thank
your
you.
Energy, your commitment, your vision, truly inspiring.
That's
and
so nice of you.
I would suggest everyone out there become a member.
Yay.
And go to the website and become a friend of the museum.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Thank you guys so much. And come back maybe after November 22nd to talk about holiday at the museum and do a postmortem on Halloween.
Absolutely.
Postmortem?
Yeah, I don't know.
That doesn't sound too good. Okay. We've used up most of the hour.
I can't believe the time just flew by.
Yeah.
I still have more to talk about, but that's okay.
We're going to have to have them back. And Bird Note is at 9 o'clock, and then we get into Otto's Eclectic Mix. We didn't even get to play the other song that I was going to
I was excited play. For that, too.
What, Tusk?
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, well, no. You get with us. We'll talk your ear off every time.
No problem at all. On this date in 79, the album Tusk by Fleetwood Mac was released. But what's interesting is that on the single of the song Tusk, it's the USC marching band. But on the studio album, it's not. And that's what we're going to play. So maybe what we'll do is move Tusk over to right after Bird Note.
You got it.
How's that?
Mm-hmm. And starting off. Yeah, Otto's Eclectic
Mix. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
It's been wonderful to have you here. And I don't have much to say heading out. Go to Sandpoint Online for a list of all the exciting things that are happening. And again, with First Avenue continuing to be torn up, up and down and extending down now, Cedar Street to 4th Avenue, support your local businesses. This is very important. They did take down the black.
Per your advice, they took it down so you can see what's going on.
You know, I said, you know, initially to the mayor, little kids just want to, you know, like you mentioned the caboose.
Absolutely. Yeah,
little kids just want to see big stuff.
I'm guessing it was up for like dust suppression.
No, they don't need it. Mm-hmm. But support your local businesses all over town, but particularly remember the ones on First Avenue.
Mm-hmm. There's a haunted house for the Lake Pendere High School. Fundraiser for the Lake Pendere High School, a haunt located just north of the Hoot Owl Cafe on Highway 200 in Pendere. So if you want to check out a haunted house, that's what's going on this weekend.
When is that? This weekend?
This weekend, yeah. Okay. So that's, you know.
I can live with that.
This weekend only. 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. and it goes to goes towards an educational trip to Washington, D.C. and New York City coming next summer 2020. An interesting time to be in those places, I would think.
I'll be in D.C. over Christmas, and
That'll be nice.
Except everybody is off at that time, and everybody is crowding every building in the Smithsonian. But that's okay. It's a wonderful place to be.
There's a lot going on actually this weekend, but we are totally out of time. I don't know. I feel bad. Just even picking one to mention because I'll have to leave out.
Well, I don't want you to feel bad, 10. Jack.
Thank you.
I want you to feel good about yourself. Mm-hmm. Bird Note.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Let's do that. And after that, Tusk.
That's right. And then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long here on 88.5 KRFY Pendere.